Welcome back, everyone, to week 7 of the Big Sky Podcast Network Power Rankings, presented by Tubbs of the Club, presented by Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. I'm your host, Brian Marceau. And okay, dudes, I got to give you a little behind the curtain stuff. I went to the Idaho-Montana game, so got back in town super late last night, which is to say my voice is going to sound hoarse because I lost it screaming at the Idaho game. Second, forgive me, dudes. Typically when I record, I do not take any sort of breaks whatsoever. You guys might be living with a water break or two because of thrashing my voice in Moscow last night. But anyway, hey, the drill, real quick, Big Sky Podcast Network Power, Podcast Network contributors, they vote in the Power Rankings poll. Big Sky beat reporters, guys like Trevin Pixley, guys like Coulter Nuanez from Skyline Sports MT, they vote in the poll. And then a handful of guys we know who are real knowledgeable at the conference, they vote too. The rankings we get, it's just the mean of all those individual slots. We don't fret too much about where the rankings are. We just talk about the teams. And with that said, we have to go right away. And we're going to spend no time talking about Cal Poly. Spoiler alert, Cal Poly's still coming in number 12. Cal Poly gets to – the good news for Cal Poly is their murderous back-to-back weeks of Idaho and Montana State are up. So the Mustangs are – they're through the darkest part of the night. But their night was pretty damn dark. So, again, I said this last week, barely talked about Cal Poly. Look, Cal Poly sucks. They can't stop anyone defensively. They can't run whatsoever. Their only hope is to play a shitty team and to have the game be high scoring so they can accrue yards through the air. They can score through the air. That's it. That's Cal Poly. Did we learn anything different about Cal Poly when the Mustangs went down 59-19 at Montana State? Nothing other than this is the third Big Sky team to score 59 points against Cal Poly, which is itself a pretty damn incredible stat. But on the game itself, from the Cal Poly end, I mean, it was 38-13 at halftime. So you can pretend that was kind of competitive. Sam Heward did return. So Sam Heward for Cal Poly goes 19-36 for 225 yards and 3 touchdowns. So at the very least on the Cal Poly end, If Cal Poly plays Northern Colorado next week, it's essentially their Super Bowl, one of the only winnable games left on the Cal Poly schedule. Sam Heward's back. That gives him a puncher's chance against Northern Colorado, but everyone in the nation has a puncher's chance against Northern Colorado. Look at the overall takeaway that I talked about. Defensively, Cal Poly can't stop anyone. Well, they gave up 578 yards to Montana State, 335 on the ground. The Bobcats averaged 9.6 yards per rush. I don't think I need to tell you any more about Cal Poly, guys. So we're done talking about Cal Poly. Going to number 11, Northern Colorado Bears were competitive, different from Cal Poly. And at least Northern Colorado is showing, they're showing a little bit of life. They go down hosting Sacramento State. They lose 21-13. So a pretty tight game, especially from the Northern Colorado win. I mean, you look at the overall flow of the game. The Bears are down 14-10 at halftime. They're down 21-10 heading into the fourth quarter. Do punch in a field goal. So like there wasn't that much suspense relative to it being an 8-point game, but not a catastrophic showing from Northern Colorado. Jacob Sermon's looking better than he had earlier in the year. That's starting quarterback for the Bears. Goes 20-39, 257 yards, 1 touchdown. David Afari, who I believe is the best running back for the Bears, he goes 10 carries for 36 yards. So a little underwhelming on Afari, but hey, Sacramento State is a top 10 team in the nation. If you are Northern Colorado and you're able to stay competitive, that's a huge developmental step. I believe the Bears have no wins, so we're looking for moral victories here. But early on, Northern Colorado was getting murdered by virtually everyone. You know, early losing 31-11 week one against Abilene Christian. You look at the last few weeks for Northern Colorado, 8-point loss, like I just talked about, against Sacramento State, 7-point loss prior hosting Weber State, and a 2-touchdown loss at Idaho State. So still 0-3 in Big Sky play, but looking more competitive at the very least. And I just think defensively, now anyone's going to look good if you have Weber State as one of your most recently played teams. But Northern Colorado looked fine defensively against Sacramento State as well. The total yardage was 334 Sacramento State, 332 Northern Colorado. I just bring up that number as a reference point because even though I don't think the game was really in doubt, you know, we're talking about a 21-13 game being 21-10 heading into the fourth quarter. But the Bears held Sacramento State to their lowest total of the season offensively so far. So if you're a Northern Colorado Bear, I think that's part of what you're taking away from this is defense is looking stronger. Look, if Northern Colorado is going to pick up wins, first they have to have something they can lean on for a win. Offensively, the Bears, they're just not there yet. But defensively, this was probably the best defensive outing we've seen out of Northern Colorado the entire season. They win the turnover margin 1-0 in the game. And Northern Colorado's in the business of moral victories, but they have a moral victory. Just reference that Cal Poly plays Northern Colorado. Well, obviously that means Northern Colorado plays Cal Poly this coming week. It's at Cal Poly, but based off the recent showings from both teams, I don't know how you wouldn't pencil in Northern Colorado as a potential favorite for this game, which if you look at the rest of UNC season, that's the only time they're going to be a favorite. Realistically, I think this is the only chance Northern Colorado has to pick up a win. And if you're living in Greeley, you have to feel defensively this looks much, much better than what you thought overall. And the reason why I wanted to talk about that 332 yards holding Sacramento State to, if a Big Sky team on average held a team to 332 yards, we'd call that the number three total defense in the Big Sky. So very, very strong defensive outing from the Bears. They're going to have to figure out a way to score points. But the Bears have been a pretty bad scoring team the entire year. That's not exactly a secret. Northern Colorado's worst scoring team in the Big Sky at 15.7 points per game. I don't think that's going to change this year. So they're going to have to hold teams down. They're the inverse of Cal Poly. Just like Cal Poly needs to score a ton, UNC needs to make it an ugly week. So we're done talking about UNC. Moving on to number 10, Weber State. Man, how the mighty have fallen. Weber State just in a free fall in the Big Sky Podcast Network Power Rankings, which mimics what the hell the Wildcats are doing on the field right now. Weber State goes down in a tight one. They host UC Davis. The Wildcats lose at 17-16. And you have to, this is just a heartbreaker to me if you're a Weber State Wildcat, because a lower scoring game against Davis, a game this low scoring, is exactly the type of game Weber State needed if they're going to pick up a win. But it just was not in the cards for Weber State. And It was tight throughout. It's UC Davis leads 14-10 at half. Davis leads 17-13 at the start of the fourth quarter, but Weber State's only able to get a field goal in the fourth quarter. Big news for Weber State is at the very least they're trying something new. Our man Kylan Weissler, who I've talked about forever on this show as being, If he's your starting quarterback, your team's just not going to do anything. Weissler did not start yesterday for Weber State. Instead of Weissler, we had Richie Munoz goes 15 of 30 in his first time out. Munoz is probably Munoz. The reason I'm struggling with pronunciation, guys, is everything I have that pulls up, it doesn't have the N-Y in the middle as middle letter. I'm going to pretend it's there. Richie Munoz, 5'11", 210-pound freshman starting in his first game. I mean, it does okay. Obviously not enough put together overall, but Munoz goes 15 to 30, 138 yards and a touchdown. On the ground, Chris Jackson led Weber State 12 carries for 59 yards. Did not hit the end zone. Not only touchdown for Weber State was the Richie Munoz touchdown pass to Chris Jackson, running back, who also had three catches for 28 yards. But going through the rest of the box score for you, Weber State held UC Davis below 300 yards and lost. I just brought up that yardage metric with Northern Colorado, but look, same thing applies. It applies to Weber State. If your team hold someone below 300 yards, we call that the best defense in the Big Sky, and it still was not enough for Weber State to pull out a win, because just offensively, the Wildcats are lost, and I think they're going to be lost the entire year. They lost they lost turnover margin 1-0, so not a catastrophe, but also Weber State was not able to force a turnover, which defensively is an issue if your team cannot score. But look at scoring totals in the Big Sky. Weber State and Northern Colorado in a death match for last place right now. Weber State averaging 18.6 on the season. That includes out-of-conference play. If we shift from talking out-of-conference and look at only conference games, right now, scoring-wise, Weber State is the floor of the conference. In four conference games, they have 54 total points for 13.5 per game. That it's virtually impossible to pick up wins against anybody who is not a catastrophe if you're going to score 13.5 points per game. I don't think there's much else to talk about with Weber State here. If this is what they're going to do offensively, they have to be nationally elite on the defensive side of the ball. They have to be forcing turnovers. They have to be getting more in special teams. And though Weber State's a strong defensive team, they are not. I am fine saying this. They are not an elite defensive team. I mean, look at what Weber State's allowing yardage-wise per game. They're the number six defense in the Big Sky at 379.5. If you're going to be a mid-level Big Sky defense, like a solid, fine, not a catastrophe, but you're going to score less than two touchdowns a game. I mean, we used to laugh on this show about Northern Colorado in the McCaffrey days, not being able to find the end zone. Well, hey, Weber State's right at that level right now in conference play. They can't move the ball through the air. Teams know about that. So they're going to stack the box on the ground. So what does Weber State do? Well, they lose. Number nine team we're going to talk about, Eastern Washington. Eastern Washington, man, their fan base should be pissed. I have to restate this. Eastern fan base should be pissed after a just monumental collapse in Pocatello. Eastern goes down 42-41. But the reason I say monumental collapse, Eastern led heading into the fourth quarter 41-21. So the Eagles found a way to blow a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter alone, a collapse that is just astounding that there's even enough minutes for something like that to happen. To go through Eastern, I mean, hit the Eastern end. Kikoa Vesperis, quarterback, was back for Eastern, and he had himself a day, 33 of 47 for 403 yards and three touchdowns. If Eastern had won that game, that's the kind of stat line that gets you in discussion for Big Sky Conference Offensive Player of the Week. I mean, from what I watched the game, Vesperis for a lot of that looked like he's one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the conference. He's mobile enough, has an arm, has accuracy. Vesperis is fun to watch, and this is his first year as a starter. Patty Ferks in the comments section: this week sucks. Patty talking about both the Eastern and Idaho end. Both my games came down to an onside kick penalty. Thank you. Oh, thank you, Patty, for letting us know that. But the collapse I'm talking about, Eastern Washington, is Idaho State. We'll hit more on the Idaho State end specifically when we get to the Bengals. But I have to tell you, the Bengals did not learn how to become an elite defensive team in that fourth quarter. They'd given up 41 points through three quarters. That's who the Bengals are. The Bengals are not going to beat teams, shutting them out, keeping things low scoring. Idaho State has to have shootouts. That's the only way they can win. Which is to say, when Idaho State's offense, yeah, they can move the ball. They can make big plays. I understand the Bengals putting up three touchdowns in one quarter, but I don't understand Eastern giving them enough time to get those. And what I'm going to look at box score wise is first some atrocious play calling, leaning on Tuna Altahir specifically out of the Wildcat late. Tuna Altahir, running back for Eastern. He's okay. He's their power back. He rushed 14 times for 38 yards. That's against one of the worst rushing defenses in the Big Sky, guys. I mean, if that's what Altahir's doing, why in God's name are you deciding that he needs to be the guy who you're leaning on late? Especially when Eastern has some talent. They have Michael Wortham as he's kind of a slash player. He's listed as quarterback. He gets some rushing plays. He didn't pass today, but he can pass well enough. He returns kicks. He does virtually everything. So if the team's going to go Wildcat, why in God's name they don't lean into Michael Wortham late to at least have the potential confusion of the guy can throw well enough for there to be more Idaho State needs to cover? But then, hey, Patty Firk saying, ref stole a TD in last possession from Eastern. Okay, Patty, sure. Why in God's name are you needing to lean on this? Why is Aaron Best, not you, Patty, why is Aaron Best needing to lean on this, leading by 20 points heading into the fourth quarter? Also, Patty says, Efton made a TD catch. So it was clearly in, got called out of bounds, had to settle for three. Okay, like you're not wrong. But then, Patty, there was a rest of the quarter that Eastern just completely surrendered. So, and then Robert Rustabaki, who I guarantee I butchered, the officials from Montana, Idaho, Montana game should be investigated for bribery and racketeering for all the one-sided penalty calls. We'll get there. We'll get to that game yet, man. But Eastern complete come apart defensively. And look, they gave up Eastern accrued 553 yards in this game, which is, again, to say Idaho State not stopping anyone whatsoever. But the Eagles found a way to give up 572 yards. That's how you lose a game. And look, Eastern also had the turnover advantage in this game. The Eagles, zero turnovers. Idaho State throws two picks. I don't know what else needs to go in your favor as an Eastern Eagle, and you still lose this game. No, this is time for soul searching on the Eastern Washington side. I mean, Eastern can't defend against the run, but again, Idaho State is not the team that is going to exploit that. The Bengals did rush for them a little bit more. Hey, Soju Gesu, 8 rushes for 72 yards and 2 touchdowns. His longest rush was 38 yards. But even with that, once you factor in sacks, Idaho State rushed 20 times for 49 yards. Hey, let's eliminate Jordan Cook from that equation. So there's no issue with Jordan Cook's sacks being what hurt the yardage. We're still talking about 16 rushes for 69 total yards. It's just not enough. And Idaho State punches in 3 rushing touchdowns. I'm not going to look this up. That's obviously their season high with overall rushes. The Bengals were still themselves with what they actually do. We'll get to that. It's just more from the Eastern end. Idaho State did not gash Eastern on the ground, which is the relative weakness of Eastern's defense. Idaho State just murdered the Eastern secondary, who's had moments where they looked solid this year. But hey, wasn't this week. And Patty Furk's also going to lean on him as our eyes on the ground, talking about saying, hey, me and Kyler both have been screaming for Wortham to get involved, and upset about general play calling in the fourth quarter. Well, yeah, impressive to have that type of meltdown. Because, I mean, look, let's talk about this from an Idaho and for like 1 second. Even if Idaho's having a defensive meltdown, Idaho's going to find a way to milk the clock to make the fact of scoring 20 points in a quarter pretty damn hard. Eastern just couldn't do it. And I know, Patty, you're saying in the comment section that Eastern probably did their version of that and just did a terrible job leaning on Altahira. But hey, Eagles are reeling. After going 2-3 through the first 5 weeks, it looked like the road forward for Eastern was clearing up for maybe, fingers crossed, maybe flirting with contention for the playoffs. Well, hey, 2-4, Eastern has no margin for error left whatsoever. And look, if you're going to lose by have a 20-point lead you give up in the fourth quarter, Eastern, I don't think you need to worry about playoffs. I think the Eagles need to worry about how they can become a team with a little more semblance of composure. Mercifully for Eastern, they get Weber State next week, who cannot exploit any defense whatsoever. Before we get to the number 18, got to hear from Snake River Stampede, show sponsor. They're the best Canadian whiskey buy you can get in the state of Idaho. $25.95 for Snake River Stampede, the standard. $38.95 for their small batch 1915 edition, which is aged a couple years longer. Both whiskeys are double barrel finished. Snake River Stampede first fill bourbon, then Oloroso sherry casks, the 1915 first fill bourbon, and then ex Canadian rye casks. If you haven't given Snake River a shot this year, I don't know what's wrong with you. If you haven't given Snake River a shot this year, you should do it immediately. Going to number 8 after I say Patty Furks in the comment section saying they're all Eastern's line is not built to run the ball. They're all big and slow. I love them, but our dudes don't move people like guys in years past. Correct, Patty, except it's Idaho State. They're one of the worst defensive teams in the league. You don't have to be that good, but I'm also just going to lean on what you guys said about Michael Wortham. Is, hey, I brought him up on my own before you brought the comment up. I don't know why they don't go to Michael Wortham instead of Tuna Alta here for those kind of situations. Number 18, Northern Arizona. And, oh, man, there's a lot of heartbreak in the Big Sky this week. This was a pretty wild Big Sky week overall, just in terms of expectations being blown up for a ton of teams. Just talk about expectations for Eastern being blown up. Northern Arizona had looked like they might be a version of a fairy tale in the Big Sky. But yeah, that fairy tale came crashing down against top 5 Portland State. And We'll throw this in. I know we've talked about it on Tubbs. Northern Arizona was 2-4 heading into this week. So whatever excitement there was about Northern Arizona having turned it around, it was only two wins heading into this week. Well, the Lumberjacks sit at 2-5 now, losing at the most fearsome home field advantage in the Big Sky at Portland State. The Lumberjacks go down 45-21. And I, the bigger takeaway here is when I talk about Portland State, which is, it's just devastating news right now. If you're me and you prefer to make fun of Portland State, but here's the story. Northern Arizona had been strong defensively in Big Sky play heading into this week. Yeah, that was not the case against Portland State. The Lumberjacks surrendered 525 yards overall while accruing just 318 on their own. Quarterback Adam DeMonte, worst game of the season, goes 16-29 for 250 yards, one touchdown, and two picks. Northern Arizona was Idaho State-esque on the ground, 19 rushes for 65 yards on the day, led by Angel Flores, who had two carries for 26 yards. Then a top running back, Devon Starling, five rushes for 20 yards. Obviously, there's not going to be that many rushes if you're losing. And NAU was down 21-7 at the end of the first half. So it was an uphill climb. The Lumberjacks were just not equipped to make. There was no comeback whatsoever. It was 14-14 tie in the third quarter before Portland State really slammed it shut with 10 points in the fourth. NAU does nothing in the fourth. That's how you get to 45-21 on this game. Receiving room, Coleman Owen leads the way for NAU with five catches for 104 yards and a touchdown. Hendricks Johnson, four catches, 87 yards. But the takeaway here is NAU had been like okay offensively, as in like, hey, they pass all right. Adam DeMonte was not lighting the world on fire, but he wasn't looking like Kylan Weiss or anything. The big step for NAU had been defensively. Well, nope, wasn't there. Just absolutely was not there for NAU. Patty Ferks is talking about that in the comment section. This game was in Flagstaff. My bad, Patty, for looking up the wrong team there. I really wish it was in Portland, but you're right. The game was in Flagstaff. One of the Big Sky narratives is that weird things happen in Flagstaff. And what I'm going to tell you is, no, they don't. NAU, if you want to say something weird happened in Flagstaff with Montana earlier, it's when Montana hadn't figured out what they want to do offensively. That wasn't weird. That was just Montana was falling apart at that point. This game, if you want to say something weird happened in Flagstaff, it's that NAU didn't figure out how to show up. So I think the excitement around, hey, is NAU good? I think we can tamp that down. I think NAU is not a catastrophe. But I don't think they have a single thing now after this game you'd say NAU does well enough to try to call them quote unquote good. I think they're in the bottom half of the middle of the Big Sky. I think the footprint for NAU to win games is having to be a little bit lower scoring, not like 20-ish, but NAU can score a little bit. They're kind of mid-level-ish offensively. They had been strong defensively early in Big Sky play, but that's not the case anymore. And maybe I was being a little bit generous calling NAU strong defensively. I mean, after this game, they dropped down to number five in points allowed per game. So they're looking good. They were looking good prior. You look at NAU's Big Sky games. Allowed 14 points against Montana, allowed 31 from Sacramento. But that's kind of par for the course against Sacramento. Held Weber State to 10 points. So maybe what you say is that defensive energy we saw from NAU early in the Big Sky schedule, it was a little bit of fool's gold, buttressed off of playing a Montana team that had not yet found its legs. And then Weber State is going to make every single defense look elite. So maybe that was the problem with understanding NAU was not reading and what the Montana and Weber wins actually meant relative to their production. Moving on from Northern Arizona, we have to go to number six, who is listed here as, my bad, we have to go to number seven, Idaho State. And Idaho State, man, talked about the comeback. Cody Hawkins has breathed some life into this Idaho State program. Worst case scenario, they're fun, but the Bengals, look, this for Cody Hawkins to turn this season into something more than just a few good feel-good moments, He has to pick up wins. There's just no way around that. And Cody Hawkins picked up, to me, a big win for the psyche of Idaho State, a big win for himself as well. But the fact of this 20-point comeback already alluded to, the Bengals now, they sit at 2-4 overall. Their wins are against, they had a win against Northern Colorado a few weeks ago, then this win over Eastern Washington. The rest of their schedule is not particularly kind to Idaho State. I don't know if there's a win on their schedule other than you'd say Weber State on November 4th. You'd probably call Idaho State the favorites in that game. But I bring that up because for Idaho State, I think it's important to not only just have moral victories of keeping games close, but to be able to point to games where those moral victories materialized into realities. And this comeback for Idaho State to beat Eastern Washington 42-41. Yes, we hit the Eastern Washington end about Eastern collapsing, but Idaho State came to play in that fourth quarter. And looking through this game, Idaho State trailed 41-14 with a minute 48 left in the third quarter. From then on, so down 41-14, Idaho State scores four touchdowns in the next 16 minutes of play. Incredible from the Idaho State end. And we got to talk about Jordan Cook. Jordan Cook was the driver of this game. Hunter Hayes played as well at quarterback. Idaho State did shift a little bit back into playing both quarterbacks. I don't think of it exactly as a 2QB system, but it is two quarterbacks playing. It's Hunter Hayes is a running threat when he plays as well, but Hunter Hayes passed 16 times in addition to his rushes. But Jordan Cook, if you haven't watched him play, you need to. I think Jordan Cook he has the best arm in the Big Sky. He didn't play, he's a transfer in from junior college, hasn't played a ton. He's more or less learning on the job. But Jordan Cook, you can see when he plays why Cody Hawkins likes him as much as he does. Dude goes 25-39, 389 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. Hunter Hayes has added 13-16 for 134 yards, one touchdown, one pick. But he can make some pretty damn nice throws. The receivers for Idaho State they're solid. I don't think they're University of Idaho, or I wouldn't even call them Montana level, but Shane James, 15 catches for 206 yards and a touchdown. Hey, that'll get you in discussion for Big Sky Player of the Week. And then Christian Fredrickson, 7 catches for 119 yards as well. Cyrus Wall, 7 catches, 92 yards and a touchdown. Man, I don't know if look in the comment section, Captain58 says Bengals are for real? ? Congrats to them. The way I think they're for real, Captain, is I don't think Idaho State's a complete walkthrough. Look at Idaho State's conference play, which maybe that's where you should pay attention, because the Bengals sit at, they're 2-1 in Big Sky play. Yeah, they got Northern Colorado, but Idaho State hung tough with Montana, lost 28-20. So look, we have 2-1 for the Bengals in conference play, with their one loss being a very competitive game at Missoula. No, Cody Hawkins is doing a pretty damn good job with these guys, making them believe in themselves, making the team fun. During the game, if you watch the stream, it obviously wasn't a sellout at Holt, but you can tell there's at least some energy for Idaho State. So I love what Cody Hawkins is doing over in Pocatello. They still can't stop anyone defensively. And I don't think that's going to change. If you look at total defense, Idaho State's number 3 in the conference, giving up 470 yards per game. It's an ocean between yards allowed from the number 10 Idaho State and number 9 Sacramento State. A 72 yard gap between those two positions. So yeah, Idaho State squarely has one of the 3 worst overall defenses in the league, whatever, but the team can score. So Idaho State wants to be involved in track meets. That's what Idaho State got. Now you saw with the early deficit, if you're going to throw that much, you're going to risk turnovers. Also, you're playing a younger guy like Jordan Cook, the turnover risk is absolutely real. And separately, if the team isn't going to run the ball, which they don't really, they have short passes that replace it. But if the team's not, this is the anti-Idaho team, as an Idaho State tries to play a little bit faster pace. And if that's not working, you're as a Bengal, you're sprinting to 3-and-out and then putting your terrible defense back on the field. So that's what it looks like when it goes wrong. But when it goes right, Idaho spreads the field. They have receivers who can take screen passes and make you miss and turn a short pass into a 10, 15-yard gain. But Jordan Cook, He has an arm. Idaho State can definitely beat you deep, and Idaho State tries to beat you deep, which happened, you know, hey, it happened enough in this game that Idaho State erased a 20-point deficit in the fourth quarter. So congrats to Idaho State. Huge win for the Bengals. I want to talk about overall team stats offensively for the Bengals before shifting. They lead the league in passing yards at 379.3 per game. It's a pretty big gap from number one Idaho State to number two Northern Colorado. Weirdly, Northern Colorado, but we'll whatever. We already hit Northern Colorado. But with how much Idaho State throws the ball in three games, 144 pass attempts, hey, five picks isn't a catastrophe relative to that many passing it. That many passes. I mean, NAU has six picks and 127 passes on the year. Weber State has five picks and 118 passes on the year. So not doing too bad. And even though Idaho State does throw, look, some of their passes are short passes that do replace rushes. Their passing offense is number three in the conference in yards per pass, 7.9 yards per pass. So they're obviously doing something right up there in or down there in Pocatello, depending on where you're at. Comment section, Dan Hawkins, Captain 58 says, Hawkins, Eck, and on the opposite end, mental are proving that coaching matters in this league. Absolutely. Absolutely, Captain. And hey, those examples were perfect. You talk about Idaho. We'll hit, this is down week for Idaho, but overall, hey, it's just, it took a year and a half to get the Vandals from a dumpster fire to, it's disappointing to lose to Montana. Whereas, you know, for Cody Hawkins, now Idaho State goes from a walkover game, essential a Cal Poly-esque bye week for teams last year, to Idaho State's 2-1 in conference and making teams sweat. So that's our Bengals. Before we get to number six, hearing from Hughes River Expedition, look, if you are the type of person, you and your family, you want to go on a river trip, you want to go on outdoor expedition, you want to see nature, you want to see wildlife, you want to see rapids, you want to see parts of the Northwest you're not going to see over, you wouldn't see otherwise, places like the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River, No Return, the Selway, or you want to go on a special trip like to see the Persead meteor shower, you got to call Colin. The trips for Hughes Expedition, they're as good as they come in this industry, and Hughes River, the trips are all-inclusive. So it doesn't matter if you're a large group, like a company or some sort of retreat, or if you're a small group, just a family, you want to have a trip you're going to talk about for the rest of your life, get a hold of Colin. He takes care of everything else. You just get your ass there. That's it. So get a hold of Colin. Call him now at 800-262-1882 or check him out at HughesRiver.com. Number six, who I will be frantically typing to fix this in my outline. Number six is UC Davis. And Davis, I gotta tell you guys, I'm starting to feel a little more down on UC Davis. I know that they picked up a win against Weber State, but if you can't figure out tonally that I do not think people should consider Weber State wins very good, then please stop listening to the show if you have not figured that one out yet. But look, the Davis wins narrowly in Ogden, 17-16. Miles Hastings passes for 184 yards on the day. And I guess Miles Hastings is one of the stories for Davis. And then I feel like that he just hasn't been as effective this year. I mean, he did go 22-34 for that 184 yards, did throw two touchdowns, zero picks. At the very least for Davis, Trent Tompkins was back. Like the last week, Davis was without Land Larrison, who is still out. And Trent Tompkins only had a few carries against Montana. He got hurt early. So Tompkins is back and goes 24 rushes for 116 yards. Having him back seems to matter for Davis. On through the air, Samuel Gabaudu Jr., who I guarantee I butchered that name, eight catches for 83 yards and a touchdown. But the takeaway here is Davis got to play Weber State. They held Weber State below 300 yards because every single team does. But Davis was not that impressive offensively. They were held below 300 yards as well. Look at Davis throughout the schedule. Davis hasn't really had an impressive week since week one, murdering Texas A&M Commerce, who is a catastrophe. So from week three on against Southern Utah, Eastern, Cal Poly, Montana, and Weber, what you have is Davis making Cal Poly look competitive. You have lost to Montana, lost to Eastern, and then barely beating a reeling Weber State team. I'm definitely down on the Aggies overall. I don't think there's much to take away defensively from this game from Davis, because as referenced ad nauseum, Weber can do nothing offensively. But early on in the year, the narrative around Davis was Davis has a good amount of returning guys. They're on a mission to prove that last year missing the playoffs was just the result of a bunch of close losses. No, that is not why Davis, that is absolutely not why Davis is where they are right now. I just think Davis is a kind of okay team. We're going to have to move on from Davis. And this pains me. This absolutely pains me, guys. I'm going to hold off for as long as I possibly can. But one of my favorite jokes, one of my favorite things to do when talking about the Big Sky, is to completely write off Portland State. And Captain, this is for you. Coming in at number 5 in our power poll is, God damn it, it's real. Top 5 Portland State is top 5 in the conference now. And I think there's a chance it's real. Before, the reason, I've got to step a little bit on the Davis, on the Portland State hype, because that's honestly half the point of the show is stepping on the Portland State hype. Portland State does not possess a single quality win on the season. So I have to stress this before talking about their 45-21 win over Northern Arizona. The Vikings are 3-3. One of those wins was against a garbage NAIA team. I'm not counting that. First two losses of the year were to Oregon and Wyoming, who obviously that's a different class of football than we're talking about in the Big Sky. So they ignore the first 3 weeks. Looking at just Big Sky play, right now Portland State sits at 2-1. They have a win over garbage Cal Poly, lost to Montana State. That was only 16 points, but it was not, to me, as competitive as the final score would indicate. And then just beat NAU. NAU is the win of the year for Portland State. And I also just think NAU is not a particularly strong team. But we ought to talk about Portland State. And we can't talk about Portland State yet without acknowledging that the team is putting points up on the board. 59 against Cal Poly. Yeah, Cal Poly's garbage. But still, hey, they did score 59. 22 against Montana State is it's okay. It's relative to Montana State's nationally elite. They're top. They're number 2 in the nation because they should be. And then 45 against NAU, you at least have to say Bruce Barnum is putting points up this season. The Portland State scoring in Big Sky conference play, they're averaging 42. It's second in conference. Only team better is Montana State right now. So I have to acknowledge that. This game in particular, the story for Portland State is what it's going to have to be for most of the year. Portland State is not going to kill teams through the air. Dante Sacheret can pass well enough, but he's not going to be a guy like Kiko Vesperis who's going to throw for 400 yards. That will never happen for Sacheret. He goes 14-19 for 159 yards and throws 5 touchdowns. That's the big one. Of 14 completions, 5 are touchdowns. Hey, how'd the guy get set up there in the first place? Well, Portland State rushed 58 times for 366 yards. They were abusive of Northern Arizona on the ground. That's how they got there. Leading the way for Portland State, Quincy Craig, who is a dual threat, 10 carries for 103 yards, also 4 catches for 35 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's a name if you make the mistake of paying attention to Portland State other than when they're playing your team. Quincy Craig's just a name you're going to have to get familiar with. Overall solid player. You look at Big Sky stats, Quincy Craig is the number 6 rusher in the Big Sky, 81.7 yards per game, 6.3 rushing yards per rush attempt. Not going to go through the passing stats for Quincy Craig, but the Vikings do have some weapons. Leading receiver was Jermaine Braddock, 5 catches for 60 yards and 2 touchdowns. But overall, look, that the story for Portland State is, if they're going to beat teams, if they're going to score like this, they're going to have to be abusive on the ground. And that's exactly what happened for Portland State. 366 yards at 6.3 yards per rush. Rushed 58 times, and NAU just did not have the answer whatsoever. Vikings also turned the ball over 0 times and dominated time of possession, 40 minutes and 13 seconds to 19 minutes and 47 seconds. So we got to take notice, got to talk about the things Portland State does, because they do some things effective. They can run the ball. Sacheret is a mobile quarterback. He can pass well enough, but between Sacheret adding a dimension of he adds yards on the ground as well. And then Portland State has got Sacheret, 12 rushes, 83 yards, and a touchdown. He was their number two rusher. But then, hey, Quincy Craig is solid on the ground. Blocking's obviously been a strength relative to who Portland State has played this year. So top five Portland State is truly top five. I hate to say it. And now I have to talk about the Portland State schedule, because if Portland State is going, they're 2-1 in Big Sky play. None of their out-of-conference games mattered. So essentially to have a prayer at the playoffs, Portland State has to go 7-1 in conference play, or they have to go 6-2 and get lucky. Portland State might have a schedule to go 6-2 or 7-1 in conference play this year, guys. If you look at their final five games of Idaho State, Eastern, Davis, Montana, and Northern Colorado, that's relatively favorable. Portland, we might be talking top five. Portland State sneaks in for a first round playoff loss, guys. That truly is in the cards with how the Big Sky has been this year. I think the conference is pretty wild to look at, other than Montana State at the top right now. Almost anything's possible. If Portland State drops just Montana in that run, and you're talking about on paper, Portland State's probably favored against Idaho State. Eastern Washington, that game looks like a 50-50 toss-up right now. Davis looks like Portland State has a good chance of being favored, and they'll certainly be favors last game of the year against Northern Colorado. Top five Portland State is a dark horse to get into the playoffs, which is devastating for this show, but credit to Bruce Barnum. Credit to the EZSL schedule. Not going to ignore that part, guys. They dodge Idaho. They dodge Montana State as well. That helps quite a bit. But you play the games on your schedule. You can't do much else. And Portland State, in the games that matter and with no margin for error because of their atrocious out-of-conference schedule, playoff talk isn't dead for Portland State. Moving on to number four, Sacramento State, who I think Sacramento State in the national polls being top five is overrated. But Sacramento State, hey, they keep winning. For the sake of our polls, Sacramento State's going to stay up there. They beat Northern Colorado in a close one, talked about earlier, 21-13. But the Sacramento State end of this game is they led 21-10 heading into the fourth, and essentially we're on cruise control. Caden Bennett, quarterback for Sacramento State, goes 25-31 for 183 yards and three touchdowns. Ezra Molini leads Sacramento State on the ground, 16 rushes for 93 yards. Marcus Fulcher did not play in this game as well. In the receiving room, Marshall Martin, All-American tight end, has his best game of the season, 7 catches for 52 yards. Incredible to say that's the biggest game Martin's had, but that's just how it's been. It's Martin's first game with more than 5 catches. It's his first game with more than 20 receiving yards on the year. Still hasn't found his way into the end zone, but he's a guy that you know teams are game planning around. Secondary, the number two receiver on the team this week for the Hornets, Carlos Hill, 4 catches, 43 yards, and a touchdown. Devin Gandy adds 4 catches for 27 yards and a touchdown as well. The defensive takeaway for Sacramento State is, look, Northern Colorado is they're a dumpster fire offensively, but the Hornets held them to 332 yards. That's 332 yards week in and week out is a great defensive effort in Big Sky play. On the season in Big Sky play, Sacramento State defensively, not quite what I expected they'd be. Look, they're giving up 26 points per game, and they're scoring 26 points per game. But the Hornets overall, they moved to 5-1 with this win. Hornets' only loss came to Idaho, 9-point loss to Idaho. It's just been in Big Sky play. The games have been pretty tight for the Hornets. You know, they're riding a 2-game Big Sky winning streak. Beat NAU 31-30 a couple weeks ago, then this week 21-13 over Northern Colorado. The big question for Sacramento State is, hey, if they're for real, they're going to have to look it against Montana State in Bozeman this week. That's the ESPN2 game at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. So that's to me a real test. And I'd say in Big Sky play, I don't think the Hornets have looked like the kind of team that's going to be able to beat Montana State. The Hornets have looked like the kind of team that they'll get into the playoffs and maybe win one game at max. If they sneak into the third round, they'll probably get their ass kicked in that final three game. But the Hornets keep winning. They've got five wins that matter for playoff consideration. Their only loss is to Idaho, a very good Idaho team. So things are clicking in first year under Andy Thompson. I still think it's safe to understand the Hornets as what we've talked about them on the show as being, is they're half step back or so from the last couple of Sacramento State teams, but this is a good team. They play hard defensively. Like I said, there's some of their overall totals are not what you might expect. You know, they're the number nine team in Big Sky play in yards allowed, but they've only allowed eight touchdowns through three Big Sky games. So hey, credit to Sacramento where credit is due. Offensively, they're steady. I mean, they're in the bottom middle of the offensive pack at 3,352 yards gained per game. And then scoring wise, they're right around there as well. They're number seven in the conference, 26 points per game. So solid, but not spectacular, but Sacramento State has been solid, but not spectacular to five Division I wins already. Look at the rest of their schedule. It's not hard to imagine how Sacramento gets to seven wins with Cal Poly, UC Davis, and Idaho State still on the schedule. But hey, Idaho State's looking tougher than you might guess. So there's a world where you see the Hornets face planting. But I'm just each week understanding Sacramento State a little bit more as a pretty good Big Sky team. No way in hell are they a top five team in the nation. Not absolutely not a prayer. But they're a solid team who come playoff time, you should expect they're playing in the first round. If Sacramento gets a first round bye, I think they'll probably get their ass kicked when they play again. Number three, and okay, spoiler, number three is Idaho, number two is Montana. We're just going to talk about this game for a while. Very rough week for Idaho. Idaho sellout crowd at the Kibbe Dome. First sellout in God knows when. And that's the game I was at. And man, Idaho goes down 23-21, but the Vandals were down 20-0 at one point in this game. Montana absolutely came ready to play, the Grizz came with their best energy of the season. But to talk about the Idaho end, the story for this game is Idaho's offensive line was just abused from first snap to last snap by Montana. The Grizz picked up six sacks. The only reason they didn't pick up 16 sacks is that Javonte McCoy had an incredible game getting away from defenders and making something out of nothing. If not for Javonte McCoy and what he can do with his legs to extend plays and what he can do with his arm, Idaho looked like they would have lost this game 42-3. The Idaho has some injuries on their O-line, I don't think some of the injuries on the O-line, Idaho's not going to be able to, there's nothing they're going to be able to do about it. Jason Eck's only been there. It's his second year. It takes time to build depth at offensive line. And Idaho's top five offensive line starters are solid Big Sky blockers through the entire season. The relative strength of Idaho has been rush blocking. Relative weakness has been pass blocking. And Montana was able to suffocate the rush. And just Idaho had no answer for Montana heading into this game. There was no answer Idaho had for Montana their pass rush. Mike Olson in the comments section saying Grizz didn't have any sacks in conference play heading up to this game. Well, they've got six now, Mike. And we'll talk about that a little bit in the Montana end, but the Idaho end is, hey, the Vandals have been number three in the nation. That's not number three in the nation offensive line. Not close. I think Idaho's still a very good team, but I think we saw the ceiling of this team, of the Idaho Vandals in playing Montana, and that, look, the best teams in the nation are going to see this game. They're going to say, okay, we need to just get to the quarterback. We need to make Javonte McCoy have to make high degree of difficulty play after play after play. And McCoy made a shit ton of those. There were some turnovers that I do not hold against Javonte McCoy whatsoever. The guy was under duress the entire time. He goes 26 of 37 for 336 yards, two touchdowns and two picks. Both his touchdowns went to Hayden Hatton, who now holds the career record for receiving touchdowns at Idaho. Hatton has 11 catches for 139 yards and two touchdowns. But of the 26 completions or 37 attempts that McCoy got off, felt like he got away from a Grizz, where a Grizz actually had a hand on him, what, 12 times, something like that. See Hansen in the comment section, true freshman at center for the Vandals, lots of A-gap blitzes, got to clean that spot up. You're right, but here's the problem, See Hansen, is Elijah Sanchez is out for the year. So that, unless there's reshuffling on the line just positionally, that true freshman at center is the answer for Idaho heading forward. So that to me is a limiting factor for Idaho against the nation's nationally elite teams. And look, say what you want. And hey, Mike Olson, hit your comment again about the Grizz not having any sacks in conference play. You're right. Idaho's O-line made the Montana pass rush look nationally elite in Moscow. Like the Vandals did, like there was a comeback from the Vandals, because again, this game was close. Like it was Montana led 20-0 in the second quarter. Idaho does pick up a touchdown with 52 seconds left in the first half. Anthony Woods 11-yard touchdown run makes 20-7. Then Idaho gets the ball to start the third quarter, and Idaho drove a bit, but chose not to kick a field goal and turn the ball over. So Vandals heading into the with 11 minutes left in the game, Montana kicks a field goal to go up 23-7. From that point on, Idaho mounted a pretty damn impressive comeback. Montana tucked it in offensively, but defensively, Idaho did recover. And we have to hit the defensive end for Idaho, because Idaho looked helpless against Montana in the first half defensively. But you know, two big drives for Idaho got this game first to 23-15, and then after two-point conversion, that's what got Idaho 23-15 from Hayden Hatton. And Hayden Hatton also caught the two-point conversion as well as a touchdown. Then Hayden Hatton catches another touchdown pass. Idaho goes for two, calls a wide receiver play. A play where Hayden Hatton is a trick play. Hayden Hatton's eventually going to be – he has the ball in his hands to throw into the end zone for two-point conversion. Missed a guy who was open, then also slipped. So, hey, Idaho loses out on that. And then, again, there was still some more suspense. I can't go into the back and forth this game. We're going to do that on Tubbs at the Club with Sammy Akem, former University of Montana wide receiver, all Big Sky talent. He's going to join Tubbs at the Club on Tuesday for more of the deep dive of this game. But it's more to say, Idaho had a furious fourth quarter comeback, still had chances. But look, the game ends with Javonte McCoy fumbling on a sack, fumble before a sack, which is exactly how you'd think the game would have ended from the Montana end, because Idaho had no answer for the Montana rush all game, except for Javonte McCoy to make people miss and to extend plays with his legs. That was it. Crew at 76 saying, go hurry offense earlier. He's talking about for Idaho. Yeah, here's the problem with that, Crewhead. I don't disagree, but the DNA of this Idaho team is to control tempo. I don't think Eck felt confident in his team rushing. That is clearly not how they practice to play for the majority of the game outside of 2-minute drill. And you might say, hey, well, circumstances dictate doing things different. You're right. But look, at some level, Bobby Hauk is always going to be conservative in the second half. That's one of the things Montana works around. I think this is part of Jason Eck's teams. He wants to control pace. He's going to go as slow as he feels he can. And look, had Idaho gotten the two-point conversion, they would have been fine time-wise, and I would have felt great about Idaho heading into overtime. But the takeaway here for Idaho is just offensive line had no answer for Montana. Then we have to talk about Idaho defensively too, because the Vandals looked better in the second half. Part of that was Montana choosing to pack it in. But in the first half, Montana just abused Idaho, especially on third down. There was a point in this game in the third quarter or in the fourth quarter where Montana had been 8 of 12 on third down conversions. And on three of the failed third down conversions, Montana kicked a field goal anyway. So only one heading into the fourth quarter, there's only one truly effective Idaho stop on third down, which is just incredible from a Montana offense that looked anemic prior to this, which is to say Idaho defense not close to their best showing. Overall, Vandals gained 394 yards, outgained the Grizzlies. But in the first half, this was absolutely murderous from the Idaho end. On the ground, Anthony Woods rushes 12 times for 41 yards and a touchdown. Nick Romano, 4 rushes for 12 yards. The 37 passes, 32 rushes is a split you know Idaho does not prefer to do. But if Idaho's not going to stop anyone, they're going to be down 20-0. Vandals have to pass. That's how this game went. Now to talk about the Montana end of this. And hey, crew had 76. In the discussion, Flathead Warrior says, I think if Vandals' first drive of the second half had been successful, it would have been so much different, but it killed so much time. And crew had 76 saying we would have tired out the Montana front and blitzers had we went up tempo. Okay, you're right, crew head, but the other part is executing going up tempo. And I'm guessing Eck didn't feel confident enough in the prolonged execution going at tempo. Maybe that's something Idaho works on for matchups against teams like Montana State or better teams later in the year. But you know, hey, C. Hansen also saying Montana's third down conversions got the crowd out of it as well. Yeah, for a sellout crowd, the dome was quiet for three quarters because Montana gave Idaho nothing to cheer about. So we have to talk about the Montana end of this game. Montana, 3 weeks into Big Sky play, after losing in week one to NAU of Big Sky play, 28-14, the Grizz looked absolutely lost. Yeah, the Grizz are found now. They're sitting at 6-1 on the season, 5-1 against Division I teams. In Big Sky play, they're 3-1. This is a team in the driver's seat for the playoffs. They've now picked up consecutive road wins over at the time ranked teams. That's Davis last week, Idaho this week, and Idaho's going to remain ranked as well. The Montana end is offensively, even though the Grizz only scored 23 points, well, they scored 20 of them in the first half. The team looks like they found what they want to do. Clifton McDowell is the answer for the Grizz. Goes 11 of 18 for 176 yards and one touchdown. The touchdown was a 76-yard pass to Junior Bergen. Bergen, five catches, 118 yards, and a touchdown. At least Montana's figured out Junior Bergen needs to be getting around 100 receiving yards a game. He's one of the best receivers in the Big Sky. Eli Gilman leads Montana on the ground, 12 rushes for 84 yards. Had a 53-yard long rush. So again, this is back-to-back weeks. Eli Gilman not actually that effective throughout the week on the ground, but has a big rush, breaks a big rush that matters in the scope of this for the Montana Grizzlies. And if you're a Grizz, what you're taking away, six sacks that felt like it could have been 16 with how well Montana was able to get to McCoy. They win the turnover differential. Idaho turns it over three times. Montana turns it over zero times. And penalties, Montana just two penalties for 15 yards. You want to talk about not liking officiating calls like, hey, that's fine, guys. But Montana took care of what they needed to on their end, especially the forcing three turnovers. I talked about on the main Tubs of the Club show, if Montana's going to beat Idaho, it's got to be lower scoring. They're going to have to force turnovers, and they're going to have to get to McCoy. Well, hey, check, check, check. That's what Montana needs to do to beat teams. And earlier in the year, you know, Mike Olson brought up no sacks for Montana, Big Sky play early. Well, maybe they've either figured something out or Idaho's offensive line is now such a catastrophe for the Vandals that we're going to be talking about the Vandals in a different way as far as pass protection. But at the Montana end, they came into a sold out arena and punched Idaho in the mouth for three quarters before the Vandals were able to do much in return. This is now looking like a Montana team that played as well against Idaho as their now 6-1 record would indicate. We're heading into the game. Montana was 5-1, but a 5-1, a lot of people weren't taken seriously because I don't think they should have taken Montana that seriously. But hey, the huge win for the Grizz. Absolutely huge win for the Grizz. Bobby Houck stormed the field, which it's funny to think of a single coach storming the field, but whatever. In the scope of Idaho, Montana, there's no way to not call this a rivalry, guys. If any Grizz are saying that, you go to hell. You don't know what you're talking about. Your coach thinks it's a rivalry. But which is great for the Big Sky that two of the major teams, the rivalry seems to be heating up for sure. Montana comes out on top, huge win for the Grizz, like a narrative altering win for Montana on this season. You have to expect that's going to vault Montana into a round top 10. That's why they're number two in our poll. And then number one in our poll, look, Montana State did nothing to change how you understand them against Cal Poly. Cal Poly is awful defensively. But Montana State just murders the Mustangs on the ground like they murder everyone on the ground. Montana State rushes 35 times for 335 yards and five touchdowns. Sean Chambers, pencil him in as maybe his Big Sky player of the week. Passes 7-15 for 151 yards. Rushes four times for 91 yards and three touchdowns. Tommy Malott was back. So Montana State has their two quarterback system where both guys see the field at the same time back. Mallott goes 7-9 passing for 92 yards and two touchdowns. Just three rushes for 31 yards from Mallott, but that's obviously the right call. Mallott missed games for injury. Why would you want Mallott taking hits he doesn't have to take in an absolute blowout win for Montana State? And if you look at Montana State, I think is kind of a differentiate themselves. Like, they are, Montana State is the top tier of the Big Sky. Then you talk about teams like Idaho and Montana, who just, I mean, it was a tough game, but those two teams showed that they're you have to understand them as relatively close. But looking at overall stats, like, Montana State is averaging 45.7 points per game while giving up 13.7 in Big Sky conference play. Just absolute decimation at the hands of Montana State, essentially no matter who the Bobcats are playing. You look at their run through Big Sky play, not the most difficult yet. They had Weber State beat them 40-0. Toughest game was Portland State. That was 38-22 win, then killing Cal Poly. Maybe we find out a little more about Montana State with the ESPN2 game at Sacramento State this Saturday. But here's what we're looking at from Montana State. Idaho's on bye, so nothing changes for Idaho. If Montana State win, no matter what happens with Sacramento State, Idaho-Montana State on October 28th is going to have conference championship ramifications. Because if Idaho can win out, they're looking at a split Big Sky conference title. They're going to have to beat Montana State. And that's a different conversation for the Tub Show when we get there. But for Montana State, even losing at Sacramento State, which I would not pick Montana State to lose at Sacramento State, I think the Bobcats are going to roll probably by a couple touchdowns. No matter the results of Sacramento State game, at Idaho is conference championship ramifications. So that's in a couple weeks, but you're on the season now. Montana State, top offense in the Big Sky in conference play, top defense in the Big Sky in conference play. Pretty damn good. I mean, they're allowing 275 yards per game in conference play. In three Big Sky games, Montana State's allowed 6 total touchdowns, guys. And then Montana, it's hard to not be impressed with what's going on in Montana State. They're strong on both sides of the ball. They've got the size to be nationally competitive. Hell, we saw that in the game Montana State should have won in Brookings, South Dakota earlier against number one South Dakota State. So Montana's unequivocally your number one. That's the show, guys. Hey, before we head out, help the show out, hit that subscribe button on YouTube. More subscribers we get, quicker YouTube has to pay us. Second, if you're a Tubbs listener and your school has some stuff at Walk-On Apparel, use coupon code TUBS in all capitals for 15% off any order at Walk-On. And then patreon.com/Tubbs of the Club to support what we're doing on the show. We cover Idaho, but obviously this show is done to cover the entire Big Sky. If you like what we're doing, hey, send us a few bucks. patreon.com/Tubbs at the Club or Venmo at Tubbs of the Club. We're going to see you guys Tuesday for the main Tubbs of the Club show. But hey, also check out Grizz Fan Pod. It's going to drop on Monday. They record on Sunday. They've also got Sammy Akem coming on too. Sammy Akem's fun as hell dude to listen to. Super knowledgeable about Big Sky football. Also played in the Big Sky. Really stoked to have him at least in this moment sticking his toe into this media space so we can share his insights both for Montana fans and to Idaho fans this coming week. So tune into both of those shows. Tubbs will be recording Tuesday at 6:45 p.m. Pacific time, 7:45 Mountain time. But hey, thanks for coming in. Kick-ass week. Big Sky's all over the place. We'll see you next week right after I click through whatever I have to find a video to close this out. I'm our JV producer, guys, so I'm talking because I can't find any video in the background. See you next week.